I'll call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:34 p.m. on Thursday, March 12, 2026. Present today are Representative Allard, Representative Stapp, Representative Bynum, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Co-Chair Shragi, and myself, Co-Chair Josephson. We've been joined as well by Representative Tomaszewski and Co-Chair Foster. So we're pretty well populated here. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lastufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, and Secretary Leah Frazier. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office with us. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, we will continue to hear public testimony on House Bill 263 and 265, the operating budget and mental health budget. Today's call-in locations are the following: Fairbanks, Kenai, Bethel, Cordova, Kotzebue, Nome, Ukiavik, and Offnets. Public testimony was scheduled to end at 3:30. However, at some point, this committee is likely to need to recess this meeting for a floor session. And so that end time may be adjusted, likely would be adjusted, so that we sort of keep our commitment for the number of minutes and hours we're inviting testimony. We've been joined by Representative Jimmy as well. Our plan is to hear testimony from those in the Legislative Information Offices first, or in the committee room, then hear off-net testimony on a first-come, first-served basis. So we're gonna take up those physically present here first, then go to the LIO, then to the off-nets. As a reminder, put yourself on the scheduled call, the appropriate number as follows. Numbers, Juneau area, 907-586-9085. Anchorage area, 907-563-9085. All other locations, 844-586-9085. Those numbers will also be displayed on screen wherever you are watching or streaming this hearing. We also welcome written testimony and operating budget. Written comments should be submitted to house.finance@akleg.gov by 5 p.m. this Friday, March 13th. Okay, so with that, we'll get started. As a reminder, testimony is limited to 2 minutes per person. If a testifier surpasses the two-minute limit, I'll politely ask them to conclude their testimony and move on to the next testifier. I sometimes have a loose hand when it comes to the two-minute rule. But we're going to start with folks in the Al Adams room with us. So I would invite Edward Wasili to join us. Wasili, apologies. Good afternoon, Mr. Wasili.
Good afternoon, lawmakers.
Tell us your name, any affiliation, and your hometown.
Good afternoon, gentlemen and ladies. My name is Edward Ray Wasley. I am a resident of Alaska. I am a citizen of the United States of America. I am also an enrolled tribal member of the Kasigluk Traditional Council and Elders, a federally recognized tribe of Alaska. I have been a caregiver since I graduated from high school. Before I graduated high school, I had all these certifications before me, such as the basic life skills, which is the certified CPR training and AED for Alaska high school students who entered the emergency medical services at that time. I entered that program and I was certified as Alaska's emergency medical services voluntary emergency technician trauma trainee. So I graduated from high school under your curriculum from 2004 to 2014, the high school graduation qualifying examinations of high school students, I completed that examinations and passed that in my first try as a sophomore of Alaska High School public school student. And I graduated with all these certifications before me. When I graduated from high school, I was eligible to become a caregiver of Alaska, a first respondent to an elder or a disabled person of Alaska. I am glad to say to thank you for the opportunity to place the funding for the budget for caregiving in this fiscal year. Thank you, legislatures, for my time here.
Thank you, Mr. Wassily. Appreciate your testimony. We'll now go to Edna Sergey. Ms. Sergey, please join us at the table. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you all for inviting me here.
Please place your name on the record.
My name is Edna Sergey. Sorry. My name is Edna Sergey. I live in Lower Kalskag, Alaska, alongside the Kuskokwim River in between Aniak and Kalskag. Most of my young life, I've been helping elders, including my mom. She's an elder, without pay, just out of the kindness of my heart. I just recently started caregiver position. And it's really hard living in the village without any access to full-time jobs. The reason I'm here is to help with more money in the budget for the caregivers. That's all I can.
Okay. Ms. Sergey, I lived in Lower Kalskag for 2 years and in Upper Kalskag for 1 year. I lived not far from the powerhouse in Lower Kalskag, and there was a store before the high school, sort of halfway to the airport, and I had a cabin there. Froze up quite a bit. But I'm very familiar with your hometown. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you all for taking the time to hear me out.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go to Letitia Phillip.
Hello, I'm Letitia Phillip. I'm originally from Tulksak, and I'm still a tribal member of there, but I now reside in Wasilla. But I've been a caregiver for about 5 to 7 years, and what I like about caregiving is caring for others and the sacrifices that we make for our people. We kind of go out of our ways to help them financially if, you know, there's some needs that our people need. Well, like in general, like the sacrifices that we make to help our people is, you know, just the happiness that you see on their faces and how much it lights them up. But I'm here to ask for more budget for our for caregiving in general.
Thank you, Ms. Phillip. So do you work in Wasilla and not Tuluksac now?
Is that the thing is, my grandfather resided in the village of Tuluksac, and I was doing it out of care, you know, just I was taking care of him out in the village. And then with his health, he couldn't get the help he needed in the rural community because of the limited resources. And I mean, like just supplies in general, he'd run out, and you know, he's paralyzed from the waist down. So he needed more help. So we seeked a facility that would accept him. So he was placed in a home in Wasilla at an assisted living home where, I mean, like, you know, I have power of attorney for him. So I noticed there's a big difference in, like, you know, how he was supported medically in the village compared to being in an assisted living home.
Understood.
Yes.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Phillips.
You're welcome.
We'll now go to Bernice Salison. Ms. Salison, welcome. Hi.
My name's...
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yep. Oh.
My name is Bernice Salison. I'm from Nunavik, Alaska, and I've been a caregiver for 22 years. I started working with my grandma long ago because I wanted to take care of her, and it's like we're asking if you can give us more budget to for our to us caregivers, and there would be a big difference to our clients because they need you know, any special needs to. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Salison. Appreciate your testimony. We'll now go to Abigail Takak. Is Abigail Takak? Here she is. Good afternoon, Abigail.
Good afternoon. My name is Abigail. I come from Shaktulik. I've been a caregiver for the past 2 years, going on 3 years, but I've been a caregiver most of my life with my grandparents, even for the elders of the village where I'm from. Where we stand in our village, I'm pretty much the only caregiver in the village. So I have two clients that I work with. One is disabled, one cannot, is not mobile, nonverbal, cannot talk. So I only have 2 hours a day with him. And the other client I work with, for 6 hours a day. I used to work with her for 8 hours, and I don't know why they cut my hours down to 6 hours. But, and also when my clients can't make it to me, I go to the elders, just to make up the hours that I miss with my clients. And I only get 2 hours a day with the elders. And working for them for 2 hours a day, you know, you clean for them, you cook for them, make sure they're well taken care of. And with all the tasks that I do for them, I feel like it's not enough hours to what I have to do for them. So I guess the reason I'm here is to advocate for them, to ask for more money in the budget to hold it and keep it safe, that it wouldn't be taken away. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Takak, I'm reminded that our budget has the number $6.8 million comes to mind, but it's for people in the personal care attendant class. So we appreciate your opinion, and we're working hard to satisfy the need for an affordable salary so that you can keep caring for folks and they don't have to be in more expensive care, because that's what you do, right?
I think this with it going higher, I think it would allow more people to be more interested in taking that job as a caregiver. So
undoubtedly. Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you, Abigail, for being here. I just wanted to appreciate your being here. She's a constituent, but I also wanted to clarify, I believe that the $6.8 million UGF that's currently in the very early stages of the budget right now, I think that also leverages federal funds, and I want to say it's $15 or $16 million total. Is that an additional? Okay. Which I think is good news for the folks who are testifying. And of course, it's really in the process. We still have to go through the rest of the process here in finance, and then off to the floor, and then through the Senate and the governor, of course. So anyway, just wanted to, in case anybody wasn't aware of that, just wanted to make sure folks know. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else? I see a lot of people in the room, but I don't see them all identified as wanting to testify, and that's fine. I see one. Why don't you go ahead and come forward and give us your name and any affiliation. Okay.
I'm Catherine Lester. I've been caretaking special needs for PCA.
And your name again is what?
Catherine Lester.
Okay. And then we'll go after Catherine Lester, we'll go to Melanie Sugunek. Okay. Go ahead, Ms. Lester.
I have been with the special needs and PCA. I have participated in Special Olympics for coaching. I've been doing that for about 18. I started in the school district when I was 19. I've worked for the rural community school district with an 8-year-old autistic student, and I found my niche. I myself am from Ukraine, so English is my second language. So I was put in a lot of IEP, plan of care studies, social, special ed. And I think without knowing it, it brought to light about what I needed help with and what I could provide for individuals later on. I really found my niche at like 20, 21. And I want to do this forever. I'm getting ready to turn 40 in a couple years. And I would like to do this till I'm like 60, 70 comfortably. I would like to not work 16 hours a day and feel like, oh my gosh, am I going to be able to afford my mortgage? Can I afford my car payment? Can I afford new tires? Because I need to take my individuals out on day out. So what I would like to see happen, and even with our job, we have a really high risk of behaviors, and comes with that is a lot of individuals, staff that get hurt on the job, a lot of placements, a lot of bodies, like warm bodies that just get filled. I would like to see that maybe one day we can get the 70% and the agencies get the 30, because we are the front line, With that being said, I would like to see more money for the budget for caregivers. And I would like to eventually have an offer for retirement. That's really big. I want to stay here forever, but if I'm not being able to be offered retirement in a finance that I can live from, I will unfortunately have to step away. I have to step away from my people, my heart, and do something that I dreadfully don't want to do every morning. So, yeah. More money in the budget for caregivers, please.
Ms. Lester, can you tell us your hometown again?
I grew up in the Chugiak area. I'm from Ukraine, the Izmail area. I came over here when I was 5 and a half.
Great. Thank you for your testimony.
Yes, thank you guys for listening.
Just to reiterate, the number was indeed 6.8, 6.9 million. Rep. Galvin was right. The total with federal contributions matching that would be 15.7 million. It's in the Department of Health. As Co-Chair Foster said, it's very early stage. So there are a number of, they call them stage gates, gates along the way between now and when we adjourn to secure that sort of funding. I now would call Melanie Sugunic. Welcome, Ms. Sugunic.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. My name is Melanie Sugunic. I'm from the Native Village of Unalakleet. I've been a caregiver for 9 years. So this past Thanksgiving, I went to go visit my father-in-law, my daughter and I did. And he lives alone. He's widowed. Elders get 10 hours a week. So I walked into his home. It was a disarray. And I did those 10 hours in 2 days. And I did go over a little bit, you know, the hours, the 10 hours. And I had to redo my timesheet. That isn't fair to my client, and that isn't fair to myself, you know? And when I left Shaq Tulik, I felt guilty because I knew he needed help, and there's just not enough caregivers. Right now, there are only 19 certified caregivers in our region, and that covers 16 villages, including Nome. 19 caregivers. And in Unalakleet, where I'm from, there's 3 elders that I'm not able to help because there's just not enough of us, you know? And just imagine, too, if there is more hours for our clients, how it would open jobs for people. And when I say that, it'd be like consistent hours type because, you know, people don't want to work for 10 hours a week, or, you know, but, and since I left, after Thanksgiving, when I left, he did ask me when the elder facility in Unalakleet was going to open. And I told him I had no idea, and he wanted to put his name down. So that tugged at my heartstrings because he's an elder, you know, he's trying to get help or support or, you know, and I think it's, but please help our elders and those vulnerable by adding more money to the budget for caregivers.
Thank you, Ms. Sugunic. We have a question from Co-Chair Foster for you.
Thank you, Melanie, for being here. You mentioned the assisted living elder care facility that's in Unalakleet that is not currently, have folks in residence. Do you have any idea what the capacity is there, or how many beds, about how many people will be able to come into the residence, and also what it's going to take to get it going, which I'm sure it's funding, but I don't know if any avenues are currently being pursued.
I think, if I remember correctly, I think it can take 12 clients. And last year, my supervisor had shared that they were waiting on a company to do the coding, if I have the right terms right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Ms. Sugunic, there's a question and comment from Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Chair. Joseph, through the Chair. Always wonderful to see you. Melanie, thanks for coming all the way from Unalakleet.
Yeah.
And testifying
you.
Today.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Good to see you, too. So. And then your email didn't work yesterday. Just like...
We'll get right on that.
It's good to do housekeeping when you have a chance. Next testifier should be Jeannie Taylor. Ms. Taylor?
Hi, my name is Jeannie Taylor, and I live in Beluga, Alaska. I grew up on Alexander Creek, and I've been a caregiver for 40 years. I've taken care of my mom, my grandma, and I've taken care of their elders. We're here as caregivers to ask you guys to put more money in the budget to help us take care of the people we have learned to love and have come to love through caring for them. Where I'm at, I'm the only caregiver out there in that area, and that's for between Beluga and Tyonic, a native village. There is no more out there other than me. And to get to Tyonic, if a senior down there needs help, I have to cross a bridge that it's very difficult to cross right now because they cut it off for passing. And in the wintertime, it's snow machine only. But there is literally, it takes over 24 hours for Medivac to get out there where we're at. So as care provider, if somebody gets injured or that, we can't get them to paramedic. We can't get them to the clinic that's out there. So somebody has to step up, which that's usually me. And if there's more people that's trained, which means more money in the budget for that, then that means more people can stay home. More people can be taken care of in their home instead of sent to a senior center or some other facility where they're forgotten and left in a corner to die.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Your work is respected and appreciated by this committee. We appreciate it. All right. Now, if you're in the room and you want to testify, please go to that table and put your name on a list and we'll make that happen. But I don't have anyone in this room telling me they want to testify. So I'm going to move forward in the normal way here and go to Anna Rose MacArthur, who's in Nome. Ms. MacArthur, are you with us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Anna Rose MacArthur in Nome. I'm a parent of a 1.5-year-old. I'm asking for the legislature to please prioritize education and the budget by investing a significant funding increase into our schools. As a parent of a 1.5-year-old, I am horrified by the persistent underfunding of public education in Alaska over many years, and I'm scared that if this underfunding continues, that there won't be the necessary public education available for my child when she becomes school age. And I am kept up at night by the horrible question of whether my family will need to move to a different state that invests more in public education and if we will need to leave our life in Alaska behind. For families to stay in Alaska, Alaska must invest in high-quality public education. I also support increasing state revenues through requiring S-Corp oil companies to pay corporate taxes, instating an income tax for online businesses operating in Alaska through HB 280, and amending SB 21 so that as oil companies' production increases, so does revenue to Alaska. We as a state should not rely on blood money earned from bombing an elementary school and slaughtering children and civilians in an unjust war to pay our bills. It's immoral and it makes us all complicit. Please change this system by creating new revenue streams. Please create a fiscal plan that robustly funds our public education. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. MacArthur. We appreciate your testimony. Sounds like you've thought through some of these issues. We'll now move to Fairbanks and Amber Vasca. Ms. Vasca, please give us your affiliation, name, and location.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Amber Vasca, the Director of Tribal Government and Client Services with the Tanana Chiefs Conference. TCC is based in Fairbanks, an Alaska Native nonprofit consortium serving the interior 42 communities, including 37 tribes, and the interior 235,000 square miles. We provide health care through our main clinic and 26 rural clinics, and we support our tribes with essential services and advanced tribal self-determination. We're facing a severe behavioral health crisis. Youth aging out of foster care with serious mental health needs are increasing faster than we can respond. In the past 3 years, suicidal ideation has increased by 90%, and youth behavioral health visits are up 58%. 20% of services are not billable, but are vital for our most vulnerable clients. Behavioral health funding has faced a decade of cuts, The community-based behavioral health grants are being cut due to declining alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana tax revenues. Reduced substance use is amazing, but those revenues are supplemental, not a replacement of sustainable funding. The 1115 waiver program does not provide sufficient billable services to offset these losses and does not provide training or implementation funds to fund these programs. Just last week, we were informed of a 75% reduction in the 2027 Community Behavioral Health Treatment Grant. We urge you to investigate this matter as these actions move Alaska in the wrong direction. Thank you for the continued investment in the VPSO program. Those funds make a real difference. BCC will have the most VPSOs in history, currently at 15 with two in the process of hiring. Our VPSOs have more than tripled non-criminal assistance hours, increased village patrol by 400%, and expanded search and rescue responses 12-fold. We appreciate your support, but 17 positions is insufficient for TCC's 42 communities, and making sustained support on is critical to strengthening rural public safety. Finally, after years of advocating, we want to thank you for your leadership in last year's increase to the K-12 Public Education Foundation formula. It does not meet every need, but it is meaningful. This year, we urge you to fund major public school maintenance, especially in rural communities, and support recruitment, development, and retention of rural educators through pension and sustained investments so that we can grow our own teachers. Education strengthens sovereignty, and our children deserve teachers who share their culture, language, and way of life to grow their confidence and lead Alaska's future. Lastly, we urge the state to protect rural program funding and to build a sustainable future through responsible revenue diversification. Thank you for your leadership and the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Vasco. As to the behavioral health grant cuts, those are restored at this time. So they're restored today, March 12th, in the budget, the $5 million you indicated. Appreciate your testimony. We're going to
awesome. Thank you.
We're going to go to Grace Singh.
Thank you so much.
We're going to go. You're welcome. We're going to go to Grace Singh in Kotzebue.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
For the record, my name is Grace Renee Singh, and I'm general counsel at Manilik Association in Kotzebue. Manilik is a member of the Alaska Regional Coalition, or ARC, which is an organization made up of seven regional tribal nonprofit service providers, two of which are tribal governments. Our membership includes TCC, Manilik, Kuwerik, Chudiak, Tlingit Haida, Inupiaq, Community of Arctic Slope, and Association of Village Council Presidents. We represent 165 communities, almost 99,000 Alaskans across our seven regions. Each of us provide health, behavioral health, public safety, workforce development, judicial, and social services on behalf of the state of Alaska. Many of these services are administered to all Alaskans living in our regions, not just for tribal members. We came together over a decade ago to reinforce the need for regional equity in budgeting to ensure that rural Alaska is kept in mind when writing state budgets. First, we are greatly appreciative to see the VPSO program continue to grow. We urge you to support the VPSO increments in the proposed and supplemental budgets to address inflation and in the increased VPSO positions. Alaska's behavioral health system also sees continuing need. While we applaud the state for maximizing the Medicaid reimbursements through the 1115 behavioral health waiver, it does not eliminate the need for further state support. We need to be very clear, the 1115 waiver does not have the available billable services to offset reductions in the community behavioral health grants. You heard earlier that we were told that there would be a 75% decrease to the program due to the declining tax from alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana sales. We're so thankful and happy to this committee for restoring that. It's great news to hear that you're going to supplement this staff with general funds and make behavioral health services in Alaska a priority to the state. Anabasu Taku, thank you for all you do and the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Singh. We appreciate your testimony and your work from Inuvik. I'm going to go to another person who likely drove to an LIO, and that is Nikki McTrusty in Kenai. Are you with us, Nikki?
Yes.
Give us your name, any affiliation, and location. Ms. McTrusty, you have the floor. Emily? What do we know? Ms. McTrusty, we are hearing you so poorly. I don't know what phone system you're using, but we can't hear you at all virtually.
Okay, is this better?
Yes.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and start over. Is that okay?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, so we would like to extend our gratitude to the DPS subcommittee for recommending a significant $500,000 allocation to the CDBSA grant line, specifically designated for legal services. This funding is crucial as survivors of violence.
Ms. McTrusty, you're going to have to speak up more. I know the grant line you're talking about, $500,000 for attorneys to work at a discounted rate for domestic violence cases. But please continue as loud as possible.
Okay, I'm right by the microphone. Let's see if this works.
Okay.
So the funding is crucial for the survivors seeking this assistance for pursuing protection orders, seeking restitution, or navigating the complexities of custody and divorce. Access to these services support mechanism for survivors striving to move beyond the trauma inflicted upon them. Furthermore, we'd also like to express our appreciation for the DEPS subcommittee's recommendation for the $1.2 million increase to the grant line in the CDBSA budget. Lee Shore's been flat funded for the previous 9 years, and this augmentation of funds is essential for the maintenance of our 24/7 crisis lines, retaining shelter positions, shelter services, and the provision of advocacy for victims of sexual assault navigating the criminal justice system. These resources are critical, ensuring that we deliver comprehensive support to those. Moreover, I'd like to acknowledge the HSS subcommittee for their recommendation of a 1.5 for the child advocacy center.
Ms. McTrusty, I heard the second item, $1.2 million CDVSA to buttress domestic violence shelter rates, essentially. You're on to a third item, and I can't hear you again.
I apologize. So we would also just like to acknowledge the recommendation for the $1.5 million increase for the Child Advocacy Centers within the Department of Family and Community Services. This funding is pivotal in sustaining the operational stability of these centers and facilitating effective investigations into cases of child sex and physical abuse. Finally, we would just like to extend our appreciation to all stakeholders who advocate for the support of these vital services. It's imperative that we collectively prioritize funding for victims and survivors, as well as dedicated to provide support. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, McTrusty. There's a question from Rep. Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I did not get at the beginning, Ms. McTrusty, where you're from, and I assume you're with a shelter program, but could you clarify that for us on the record?
It looks like, Rep. Hannon, if this is accurate, and they tend to be, she's from the Lee Shore Center in Kenai. Does that sound right, Ms. McTrusty? You're from the Lee Shore Center in Kenai. Got it. Okay. Thank you for your testimony. We're now going to head all the way from Kenai to Fairbanks. It's about a 9-hour drive, but we're going to do it in 2 seconds. Erica Burr.
Hello. Thank you for hearing my testimony today.
Wow. Miss Burr?
Hi. I'm calling today specifically to focus on asking the House Finance Committee to prioritize early childhood education and K-12 public schools and operating budget. I also want you to support universities, but I think we have to focus. So, you may be aware of the work of Nobel Prize-winning economist James Heckman, showing that investing in high-quality early education, childhood education, that is, birth to age 5, provides the highest returns for economic and social development. If you're curious, you can look up the Heckman equation. His research emphasizes that early skill development, including emotional, cognitive, and social skills, is crucial for reducing inequality, crime, and poverty. In short, crucial for building a strong future. Specifically today, I'm asking for the following funding levels for 5 items. $7.5 million for the annual youth award, $5.72 million for infant learning, $500,000 for parents as teachers, $400,000 for Best Beginnings Imagination Library, and $680,000 for Head Start. I'm a high school teacher as well, as being a parent of young children. Many of the challenges we face in K-12 education would be significantly eased by better access to affordable, quality, local child care programs when K-12. Babies, toddlers, and preschoolers are intelligent, capable sponges who daily amaze those of us who spend significant time caring for them. These early years, to reach their full potential, must be full of joyful connection with caregivers and peers, exploration, and skilled, guided, appropriate activities that help our children build their cognitive, social, and emotional skills in a safe environment. The gains our children make through quality early education do not fade out, but magnify any future investment. So this is probably the most important use of our resources, in fact, developing our rich resources. I also ask you to prioritize a meaningful increase to K-12 public school funding so that our schools and the families and communities they serve can thrive. Our young people are so capable and clever, hilarious, curious, compassionate, and passionate about making this a great place to live. They have so much to offer. Our state has a responsibility to educate and train them so that they can spread and make Alaska the best place to live for generations to come. Thank you for putting our children first. And if I didn't manage to say it quite right, I'm Erica Burr. I'm a parent and teacher in service. Thank you.
Right, and Erica, I understood... you said essentially $5 million for ILP, $500,000 parents and teachers, $400,000 Best Beginnings Imagination Library, $680,000 Head Start. But you started with a $7.5 million item. What was that?
Oh, I was bumped my head. Sorry for the entrance. The Roots Award, the annual Roots Award, because in supporting our early childhood education, we really have to make sure we're supporting programs that are working and making, recognizing and supporting those teachers.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thanks for your testimony, Ms. Burr. Yes.
I think part of it, maybe we can remind the public.
Yes.
So when they're speaking, it sounded like she had us on live too, because I can hear you coming through the mic.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for that. You're the second
one. Burn it off. Yeah.
So folks can't watch us and speak to us, essentially. They can, but... The system doesn't work well. Okay. So could you, Ms. Rep. Galvin, could you, what is the $7.5 million item?
Sure. I think I can speak to that. The best of my knowledge, this is the care providers. All of the early learning folks have come together and said we need to incentivize care providers, child care providers, to continue in this career. And so presumably these funds then would be spread among all care providers to allow them to have a bonus, if you will, or incentive to stay in that career.
Thank you. All right. I've not been given – any other list of folks here in the Al Adams room. And so I can't identify anyone who may have signed on. So we're going to go to, at this moment, so we're going to go to Steve Meckel in Fairbanks, a caller from Fairbanks. Mr. Meckel. Wow. Mr. Meckel, we really can't hear you at all. I heard you say you're Steve Meckel, and that's all I got out of that. Mr. Meckel.
Okay. Is this better?
It is. And is your TV off?
Yep. TV's off.
Okay. It's barely better, Mr. Meckel. Why don't you try it again and speak as close as you can to me? Yes.
I am speaking as close as I can. Can you hear me now?
We can, and we're crossing our fingers. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'll start over. Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the House Finance Committee. My name is Steve Meckel, and I'm calling from Fairbanks. I currently serve as the volunteer board chair for the Resource Center for Parents and Children, the nonprofit that operates Stevie's Place, our local child advocacy center. First, I would like to express our gratitude for the $5.5 million that the legislature has already included in the budget for child advocacy centers. This funding is truly the foundation of the trauma-informed care we provide to children across the interior. And my reason for calling today is to specifically urge your strong support for the additional $1.5 million increment intended to backfill a loss of federal VOCA funding. These federal reductions have created a huge gap that we just can't bridge through local fundraising alone. Stevie's Place plays a vital role in supporting child victims throughout the interior, assisting our local law enforcement and helping families navigate extremely traumatic circumstances. The stable funding allows us to maintain our forensic interviews and advocacy services. So without this backfill, we'll be faced with reducing the level of services to the children in our community. So in closing, again, I would like to thank you for the funding that is already being included and the work that this committee and the legislators do. And also, again, just ask for your support for the additional $1.5 million. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Meckel. We'll now go to Soldotna Jacqueline Michaels. Ms. Michaels.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. My name is Jackie Michaels. I'm a Juneau girl relocated to sunny Soldotna. And can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I'm calling today as a caregiver for Consumer Direct, specifically to speak to the issue of respite care and home support. I'm just so glad to have the opportunity to speak, and I've appreciated all the comments so far. And I'd like to apologize for the fact that I sound so congested, although it's a timely reminder that none of us are immune to health care issues. It's only a matter of time before our health is going to affect us or our loved ones. I'm going to speak to you today from the perspective of a PNH turned nurse, as well as a caregiver. I've retired, but I'm a caregiver now. And as a person who once desperately needed the services of a caregiver to my own loved ones, I will start from a nursing and a caregiving perspective. No doubt the topic of money has and will be discussed today. And while it's clearly less expensive to provide in-home care to those who need services, there is much more to that equation. In nursing, they have a set of diagnoses, and one of them is called caregiver role strength, meaning that if a patient is very vulnerable, so are the family members who care for that individual. Every nurse and caregiver must realize that they have two or more patients, the primary patient and the family. While the primary patient or client has specific needs, including dignity and quality of care and choice, family members who must detail their employment, recreation, and personal care also require dignity and choice. When I was in nursing school, I learned all this via the textbook. In practice, I saw this. But in my own personal life, I experienced this while caring for my elderly 92-year-old grandmother after my father's death. There I was, poor, young teens, a preemie baby, an elderly grandma, and my husband worked on the North Slope. Having the ability to receive some home care not only saved the state countless thousands of dollars, but our family of eight benefited from receiving in-home care for both my infant and my grandmother. Life was still an extraordinarily difficult time. Our family remained intact and even thrived. Without quality, compassionate care and choice, I do not believe that any of the eight of us would have fared very well. And recently I accepted a position offered to me by Consumer Direct Care because my long-term friend needed assistance in caring for her elderly aunt. Although her large extended family took shifts, took time off work, and took care of her and caring for auntie, they still were strained as a group to get all her needs for care covered. As a friend and a caregiver, I saw how much the services were needed, and I was so grateful to be a meaningful part of this client's care. While I wait for this cold to resolve, I have no delusions that one day it might be my children trying to juggle my care. I know they love me, and I know they will sacrifice me. Still, I know this will be a strain for them, and it will be for all of us one day, in one way or another. And, you know, as a matter of fact, as I kind of go through this story, my friend, I just circled her last day of work on the calendar. It was too much for her. She had to resign at 62. Even though they couldn't give her more than 30 hours. And so my friend had to take early retirement. So that's just a personal side note. So thank you so much for what you do to support our families, our elders, and thank you for honoring the Alaskan tradition of honoring our loved ones by retaining and consider even expanding the funding so that we don't have to quit our jobs to take care of our elders and our loved ones. Thank you so much for today.
You bet. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Michaels. So it's 2:26 p.m. We're being called to the floor. Sorry. Rep. Jimmy, did you have a comment?
Yes, I have a quick comment. I just kuyakum J. Bernice and Edward Kanach J. Mavit kuyakum J. Jacknachbuck.
Thank you. We're being called to the floor, and so we're headed that way. I'm going to recess the meeting, and that means that, like any recess, we can come back to this. What's going to happen is I will be on the floor. We don't know. Maybe it's 60 minutes. And there will be a committee announcement, and I will say this committee will reconvene or begin again 10 minutes after we leave the floor. That's what I'm going to do. Rep. Hannah, do you have a question? All right. With that, we'll recess today's hearing at 2:27 p.m. We're recessed. We're back on record at 5:27. Little housekeeping. We were last on record in this room. This is House Finance on Thursday, March 12th in the Al Adams Room in Juneau. We were last on record at 2:25 p.m. So that's exactly more or less 3 hours ago. We went to the floor. Floor took some time. And then I was called to a press conference of sorts. That took some time. But I want to apologize to Alaskans trying to contact us and make you an offer as well. But let me read through this. We've extended public testimony until 7 p.m. tonight. That's 90 minutes. Testifiers may add themselves to the schedule until 6:30 p.m., so that's an hour from now, when the schedule will close. If no one else is scheduled by 6:30, we will conclude public testimony for these locations. All callers who call in by 6:30 will be given a chance to testify. That's the important part. If you call in by 6:30, you'll be given a chance to testify. Please know we apologize if you were calling in from a legislative information office early and are no longer able to testify from that location. Tomorrow we will continue public testimony at 1:30. You're welcome to call in from home or wherever you are. Testimony will be open between 1:30 and 3:30, with the last time to schedule your testimony at 3 p.m. We appreciate your patience with yesterday and today. I guess my offer, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening in, is you can call from wherever you are and not worry effectively about where you're from. So, for example, if you think, oh, well, they've heard from Petersburg and they don't want to hear from Petersburg anymore, just call at the times I've noted. As a reminder, the following locations for public testimony during this hearing are Fairbanks, Kenai, Bethel, Cordova, Kotzebue, Nome, Ukiavik, and Offnets. To put yourself on the schedule, call the appropriate number as follows for Juneau, 907-586-9085. For Anchorage, 907-563-9085. From all other locations, 844-586-9085. Those numbers will also be displayed on screen wherever you are watching or streaming this hearing. We are also welcoming written testimony on the operating budget. Written comments should be submitted to house.finance@akleg.gov by 5 p.m. this Friday, March 13th. All right, with that, we're going to continue. As a reminder, testimony is limited to 2 minutes per person. If a testifier surpasses the 2 minutes, I'll politely ask them to wrap up their testimony and move on to the next testifier. Currently, we don't have a long list of callers. I'm going to confirm that so I see a Eileen Arnold. Has Eileen already testified? Okay. Eileen Arnold of the Tundra Women's Coalition, are you with us from Bethel?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Oh. Yep. Give us your name, association, location, and begin your testimony.
All right. My name's Eileen Arnold, and I work at the Tundra Women's Coalition in Bethel, Alaska. And I would like to start by thanking the DPS subcommittee, especially our Rep. Jimmy, for recommending that $1.2 million increase to the grants line in the CDVSA budget. This will help our agency fill the gaps that prevent survivors from getting safe, getting services, and stabilizing. In particular, survivors who struggle with mental health issues, developmental disabilities, substance misuse, or are elderly. We've seen a big spike in these types of cases, and it's really easy for them to slip through the cracks if they don't have someone paving the way for them to services. Just today, we facilitated an integrated assessment of a woman in shelter who suffers from delusions and hallucinations and is probably schizophrenic. She doesn't trust the local health corporation and refused to go there, but we built trust enough for her to get the assessment done at TWC, and that was accomplished today. Votes to support community-based programs like ours is often a vote not only to provide victims with services, but to pay local people living wages. I know you've seen the same headlines that I have, that a quarter of Alaska's workforce doesn't even live in Alaska. I'd say that's even higher in my region. I employ people who live in the Bethel community. I'd like to thank the HSS subcommittee for recommending the $1.5 million increase to the child advocacy centers in the Department of Family and Community Services. This keeps us at level funding and allows investigations into child sexual and physical abuse cases to keep moving forward. I recently lost a CAC staff person to a $40 an hour job. That's more than $10 what I was paying them. But the cost of living keeps increasing out here, and having a mortgage makes it difficult to turn that sort of money down. There are so many agencies desperate for decent workers, and most of them can afford to pay people a lot more than I do. This money will give me space in the budget to attract and keep decent workers. And I'd request for the full finance that those additions stay in the budget. And I'd like to thank you all for your work, especially when it goes late into the night like tonight.
Ms. Arnold, thank you for your testimony and for your good work out there in Bethel area. We're now going to go to Heidi Haas in Fairbanks. Ms. Haas, are you with us?
Good evening. Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. My name is Heidi Haas. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Center for Children and Adults, and I'm also the president of the Alaska Infant Learning Program Association. I'm testifying today in strong support of expanding infant learning program services in FY27. We were grateful to see the legislature include that long-awaited ILP expansion increment in FY26, so thank you again, and we respectfully ask the House Finance Committee to continue that support. Please fund ILP eligibility expansion to include infants and young children experiencing a 25% delay. Our organization, ACCA, is based in Fairbanks, but our ILP serves four regions in Alaska, covering nearly 150,000 square miles. Every day I see how early intervention improves outcomes for children and strengthens families. Lowering the eligibility threshold from 50% to 25% ensures that more Alaskan children can access services at the most critical stage of development while saving the state money. We understand the budget pressures you face. That's why it's important to emphasize that early intervention provides a strong return on investment, up to 400% for the state of Alaska. A $5.72 million increment increase in ILP funding can reduce state special education costs by nearly $35 million annually in the future. Half of the children with delays between 25 and 50% who receive ILP services would not require higher cost special education services later in K-12, a cost saving to the state in the long run. I also want to add my support for the funding requests for the other early childhood increments that other testifiers have brought forward. And I'll also submit my written testimony outlining additional benefits in just the interest of time. I thank you for resuming this evening and to the committee for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Haas. Yes, the legislature passed a significant ILP increase. The governor vetoed it. I was discouraged that we didn't try to override that veto. We know that it has bipartisan support. There's a bill that aims to increase the benefit, and we can also look at a budget, a non-statutory budget solution. So we appreciate your testimony. All right. So now I go to, it looks like Melissa Wolf in Bethel.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Wolf.
Okay. Yes. My name is Melissa Wolf, and I'm a family nurse practitioner that serves here in Bethel. I do live in Bethel, and I work for YKHC, and we have a partnership with TWC, serving the victims and the survivors of violence. And I do feel like it's a wonderful partnership. I would also like to thank the DPS Finance Subcommittee for choosing to increase the funds to the CDVSA grant line, and the DFYS Finance Subcommittee for the addition to the CACs. And I'd also like to request the full Finance Committee to keep the additions in the budget. One other thing I would like to mention is a role that I play with the TWC partnership with YKHC is it's a very... It's the collaboration between the two entities allows me to provide care for patients that are clients, survivors that are in TWC and that come through the CAC so that I can provide a holistic approach. One of the beauties, I can spend as much or little time as the patient needs. I can provide resources to the hospital for them. I can help them access services. So it's a very beautiful partnership that we share.
with between YKHC and between TWC and the CAC. One of the things that I encourage and one of my goals is that I hope to build trust with the patients that I encounter, with the clients that I encounter, so I can build trust with them through the healthcare system and ensure that they receive all of the support that they can so that they can continue to heal and to grow and to become independent with their health and through their process. And I think that with the additional fundings, it would be critical so that we can continue to grow the program and access the resources that are available and add to those resources and help meet the needs of the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wolf, and thanks for your work with YKHC and the Tender Women's Coalition there in Bethel. I don't see any other callers now, which saddens me because of the interruptions in our schedule and previous efforts to call. So to remind you all about calling, if you're in Juneau, you can call at 907-586-9085. If in Anchorage, 907-563-9085. For all other locations, 844-586-9085. You can also do written testimony before tomorrow at 5 p.m. at house.finance@akleg.gov. What we're going to do is we're going to take an at ease for 15 minutes. There shouldn't be any, that should be a commitment we can honor because there's nothing else obstructing our evening. So we're going to go at ease for 15 minutes, resume at 5:55. We're at ease. All right, we're back on record in the Al Adams room on a Thursday, March 12th at 5:55 p.m. We are committed to staying here till 6:30 for folks calling in. Alaskans can call in from the Juneau area at 907-586-9085, from the Anchorage area at 907-563-9085. That's 586-9085 for Juneau and 563-9085 for Anchorage. All other locations, 844-586-9085. People can also write us before tomorrow, Friday, March 13th, at house.finance@akleg.gov with their written testimony. We're going to go at ease again for 15 minutes. I think I'll make it 20 minutes till 6:15 to see if people have called in. And so we'll be at ease at 5:56 for the next 15 minutes. We're at ease. Callers at the moment, but I made a commitment to take callers that called in by 6:30. It's not 6:30. Callers can still call in from Fairbanks, Kenai, Bethel, Cordova, Kotzebue, Nome, Ukiavik, and Offnet. For Juneau, it's 907-586-9085. For Anchorage, it's 907-563-9085. From all other locations, 844-586-9085. You can also give us written comments. Those should be submitted by tomorrow, Friday, March 13th at 5 p.m. at house.finance@akleg.gov. I'm going to return, hopefully with my committee, in 15 minutes and see if there are callers. We'll go back at ease at 6:17 and come back in about 15 minutes. We're at ease. So it's 6:30 p.m. Here in Juneau. This is the House Finance Committee. We're back on record on Thursday, March 12th. We did not receive any other callers, whether off-net or otherwise. And so that will conclude our business for today. Our next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, March 13th at 9 a.m. At that meeting, we will again take up House Bill 280, Apportionable Tax Income, Digital Business, and SB 64 on elections. There is another chance to testify under public testimony tomorrow at 1:30 p.m., and that is scheduled to end at 3:30, but it could go longer. And with that, I think we're ready to adjourn the meeting at 6:31 p.m.